Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
One of the big storylines coming in was these are two, quote, small market teams, whatever. The ratings haven't been great. What would you tell people who, for whatever reason, chose not to watch this, what they're missing?
I do not care, to be honest with you. This is high-level basketball, and I'm excited to be a part of it. So, I mean, I couldn't care less.
And that is the voice of Tyrese Haliburton talking about his view of the NBA Finals TV ratings. Not quite a surprise that a player in the series doesn't care how many people are watching. But certainly he's not alone in that feeling. A lot of people are very resentful of the ratings conversation. But this is a sports media podcast, so we're going to talk about those ratings in this episode. Welcome back to the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, joined as always by Armand Brody. Please subscribe to the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. So full disclosure, Armand and I taped the SMW podcast last Monday, a bit earlier than usual because I went to the NBA Finals Games 3 and 4 in Indianapolis. I assumed I'd have the time at some point to edit the podcast and get it up and out for its usual weekend-ish release date, but as you can imagine, being at the finals, didn't really have the chance. So we get all the way back around to Monday again, and I figured, well, if I'm going to put this podcast up late, I might as well get the ratings updated. So what we're going to do here is Armand and I are going to discuss the ratings that came out for Friday's Game 4 in the NBA Finals generally. Then we're going to go back to what we talked about last Monday. So a little bit, obviously, not ideal to have a week-old podcast discussion, but Armand and I went into great detail on the TNT spinoff last week, and I think that's still pretty fresh. So we're going to have that at the end of our NBA Finals ratings discussion. So let's start with that NBA Finals ratings discussion. Game 4 of the finals on Friday night was the most watched of the series, which is very rare since the NBA went to its elongated finals scheduling format for the first time in 2016. That Friday Game 4 has only ever been the most watched of the series one other time. That was in 2022 when the Warriors and Celtics played in Game 4. So that's the good news. The bad news is that Game 4 audience is still down 2% from last year. Now, you might say, well, weren't the other games in this series down 19 and 20 and even 29%? Yes. So why is it a problem to be down only 2%? Because the comparable game last year was Dallas beating Boston by 38. Easily the least watched game of the series, and at the time, a shockingly low number for the finals. So when you can't even beat that with a great game, a great down-to-the-wire game, it's not necessarily good news. What I will say is this. The fact that this series was able to buck the usual trend, which is the Friday Game 4 is either the lowest of the series or at the very least not the most watched of the series, the fact that it was able to buck that trend is the first sign in this series that the quality of play is having an impact. Now, that may not amount to a whole heck of a lot, but this is a 2-2 series. And simply just having a Game 6 gives it a leg up on the past 2 years, and the potential of a Game 7 seems fairly real. So if you can get to a Game 7, these numbers might not look so bad. But Armand, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm encouraged. I mean, as encouraged as you can be with the number, Because like you said, John, the games are really entertaining. And that's really all you can ask for. Listen, we are where we are at this point with this series. There's been so much commentary, so much chatter. Don't particularly love Tyrese Halliburton getting asked about the ratings as if that's his job to care about it. He's got bigger fish to fry. But if you keep delivering games like what we've been seeing, and you were in the field house to watch that game, so you know. You were even talking on X about how loud the arena was, and just was asking about how that translated across on TV. But if you keep giving people quality games, if you keep providing people with drama in sports it's irresistible when it's consistent and when it's done at a championship level. And that's what we've been getting in this series. So if the Thunder Pacers, obviously we know we're going to get a sixth game. If we get to that seventh game, I guess I'll sort of pose it to you. What kind of number is reasonable to expect for a Pacers Thunder game seven?
Well, the previous game seven, obviously you're not getting anywhere close to that. That was Cavaliers Warriors in 2016, one of the iconic all-time NBA games, over 30 million, and that's without out-of-home viewing. So in today's environment, probably that was Father's Day. That's over 40 million in today's ratings environment for certain, but you're not getting anywhere close to that. You're not sniffing that. The game seven that I would look at as analogous to this would be San Antonio, Detroit. And that was 19 million in 2005. This series so far is not even San Antonio, Detroit. First four games of that were 10 million viewers for each of them before jumping to 13 and then 15 and then 19. I look at this coming up here, game five and game six, they're going to need to get to over 10 million in these games. There's no excuse for 9 million or anything below 10, unless, of course, OKC wins by 40 in game five or something like that. So if you can get to 10 million, 11 million for five and six, I think a jump from that to about 17, 18 million for game seven is reasonable. And that's kind of where I'm thinking, 17 to 18 million. But, you know, this series has come in under my already low expectations time and time again. I predicted 10 million for each game in a five-game series, and it has not been able to reach that point. And I thought my prediction was relatively on the low end, because before this series started, I did not believe that simply OKC and Indiana by itself, just because those two teams are those two teams, was going to tank the ratings. If you had told me before the series started what the quality of the games would be, I would have thought there was an outside shot that viewership would be up. I remember after the Halliburton shot in game one, one of my followers on Twitter was suggesting to me that maybe game one might have gotten 12 million viewers. And it didn't seem crazy to me, because it's like, wow, that was a great game. We haven't had a lot of great games in the finals. I would never have thought that you could have great games, and because it's OKC in Indiana, people don't want to tune in. We saw with Florida and Houston. Now, granted, Florida and Houston are more established in college basketball. But we saw with them, great game. Didn't matter who the teams were. Yeah, you didn't get Duke, but okay. And for the NBA fan base might not actually like basketball as much as the college basketball fan base. I mean, what do you think? Because I see your expression. What do you think of that?
No, I think that's a legit statement. I mean, and there are reasons to believe, especially with based on how sports media talks about the games themselves, that perhaps even those in sports media believe that the fans don't actually care as much about the games themselves as college basketball fans do. Let me ask you this question. Last year, you had five game series, average of 11.3 million. Can Thunder Pacers, is there anything that can happen in your mind the rest of the way that would allow Thunder Pacers to approach that number from last year, the average, or even surpass it?
I think it could. I do. I mean, I think it's very unlikely, but I think it could, because if you go to a game seven, I don't think people understand. Game seven's salvage series in the ratings. Mm-hmm. Major League Baseball had two World Series that were at record low trajectory. but they both went 7, and so the ratings really weren't that bad. That would be San Francisco, Kansas City in 2014, and that would be Washington and Houston in 2019. Those were both at record low pace. They both did very poorly for the time in those first 5-6 games. But then you get to, well, frankly, no, just really the first 5. Because you get to game 6, game 6 is a big lift, right? And then game 7 is a really big lift. And once you get through 6 and 7, the average looks perfectly respectable. Do I think this series could end with an average that is above last year? I think it could get close. I think maybe last year was 11.3. This year, if it goes 7, 10.6, 10.8. And I don't think you can rule out 11.4, 11.5. But 7 is going to have to really pop.
You know, you make such a great point about how a 7-game series can do so much of the heavy lifting. I'm even thinking about your comparisons to MLB. That Washington-Houston series in 19 ended up with an average of almost 14 million, I think, the viewership number there. And that was not, if not for a 7-game series, there's no way you get that number. The San Francisco-Kansas City game 7, that was over 20 million, right, John? Do you remember off the top of your head?
Yeah.
And I remember there was some chatter about the number in that series as well, and how maybe in the minds of so many people, there was just a lot of concern about whether people would be interested in a San Francisco-Kansas City World Series in 2014. But you're right. Game 7s have a way of saving a series. So obviously, we want the drama of a Game 7 from just an overall viewership enjoyment perspective. And of course, the networks want a Game 7 as well. But I'll be really curious to see. I hope we get a 7th game because we have not had one in almost a decade. We haven't had a Game 7 since, as you mentioned, since LeBron versus Steph in 2016. But, and by the way, while I'm on that subject, how about 2016 in sports with Chicago-Cleveland World Series Game 7 and Golden State-Cleveland Game 7? I don't know if we'll ever get anything like that again in our lifetime, John. With MLB and NBA? Yeah.
Patriots over Falcons and the comeback as well. That was 17, but part of that same season.
Right.
And there was another upset in November that year that we won't talk about on this podcast.
but 7-game series do have a way of saving the series. So I hope Oklahoma City, Indiana goes 7. And I hope it's an amazing game because with everything that's happened around the NBA, the conversation about ESPN's coverage, Pat McAfee making it about him, Stephen A. making it about him, Kendrick Perkins making it about him. I hope that just for a little while, we can stop and just watch a really good, really important basketball game and just for a moment celebrate the sport in a way that these young athletes deserve because it's been a fun series. The Pacers in particular have been just thrilling to watch all postseason long.
Exactly. And, you know, at a certain point, it's going to matter for the NBA to actually make a fan base that cares about the game. Now, the NBA, since LeBron James went to Cleveland, has been pretty much primarily about the offseason. It's been about July 1. The problem is there's no games on July 1, not even during COVID were there games on July 1. Right. Although actually, that's not true. Atlanta, Milwaukee game 6 was on July 1 in 2021. I forgot. But, you know, there's tremendous value in celebrating the game and making the game sacrosanct. It's all fake, right? It's just sports. None of this matters. But it's in your best interest to make sure people care about it. It would be like if Disney, for the marketing of Toy Story, said, you know, these are just toys, right? Whatever. The point is, people have to actually believe that the toys have feelings. They have to believe that the fish have feelings or whatever else that Pixar puts together. You have to believe. And the NBA is very efficient. This is a league that is very much high-minded, intellectual, but that doesn't work in sports. High-minded and intellectual don't work in sports. Now, that doesn't mean you have to be anti-intellectual, okay? You don't have to be going around, you know, with the caveman stuff, but you can't be so above the clouds with your rationality that you completely ignore that there's a lot of irrational in sports. You have to lean into the irrational. It is irrational to need to see the pregame introductions before the game. It's irrational to need to have a Bob Costas-style opening tease. It's irrational to need to have the logo of the finals on the court or on the front of the team jerseys. Those are all irrational things, but they add to the broadcast because it's not efficient. It's not rational. That's sports. Sports is not rational. This is all crazy. They put on tank tops and cleats and tights, and they go out and play these games with these ridiculous rules, and we all act like it's the most important thing ever. There's nothing about it that makes sense. So it might make the most sense to say, well, why are we showing the pregame introductions and not monetizing this with an ad break? Well, why are we putting the logo on the court? We have a sponsorship deal with YouTube TV. They want their logo to be most prominent. Why are we putting the logo on the front of the jersey? We have ads to sell. But the magic of sports is that no matter how much you are aware that it is a business, you feel deep down in your bones that it is not. And the key to doing this properly is making sure that people don't lose that illusion.
So true. And sports is at its best when there's tension and drama and when people believe it. You have to be so committed and so devoted to the theater of it all that you have to buy into the fact. You have to buy into this illusion, like you said, that this is the most important thing on earth. Not only do these guys wear these outfits and the tank tops and the sneakers and the whole thing, they get paid $50 million to do it. It's quite ridiculous when you really stop and think about it. But if for those 2.5, those 3 hours, I can just believe it, and I'm living and dying with everything that's happening, and I am fully immersed in the atmosphere, I'm fully immersed in the vibe. And I would love to know from you, when you were at Gingrich Fieldhouse, how much of that did you feel as just an objective observer? And do you get caught up in it being there?
Well, I certainly am interested in the outcome of the game. You know, I'm not playing solitaire, right? I'm sitting down, I'm watching the game as it takes place, right? So for me, you know, I was very interested in the outcome. But I say I'm caught up in it. I would say I've felt much more intensity watching the finals at home when I might have a rooting interest. But, you know, it is a captivating atmosphere when you're physically there. The crowd is so loud. And I will say I went to the three of the four Pacer playoff games, three of the Pacers' most recent playoff games against the Knicks I went to for SMW. And it wasn't anywhere close in terms of the raucousness of the crowd to games 3 and 4 of the finals. So the crowd is at a whole different level. So for all you Knicks fans out there that think, oh, their championship was beating us. No, they care way more about this finals against OKC in Indiana. The crowd was at full throat. And, you know, that's another thing. I want to hear the announcers, but I don't want to hear them that badly. I want to play just really quickly one of my favorite all-time calls, because you can barely hear it. It's Marv Albert in Game 4 of the 2002 Conference Finals, Lakers against Sacramento.
Putting the move on Christie. Rebound O'Neal. Coming up short. Ori for the win. Yes!
So, everyone's probably heard this call before. You can barely make out Marv at the end. He's saying the Lakers have somehow defeated the Sacramento Kings on a three-pointer by Robert Horry. You can barely hear him. That's good. We want to be caught up in it. The noise is good. You know, I caught a little bit of the game broadcast that ABC did of games 3 and 4, and you are missing out, those of you who weren't there. It's not nearly the same. we don't need to hear the announcers that much. One other thing I would note, I don't know, Armand, you might be better to ask here than I don't know if I could, if I even know the answer. How often do Burke and Jefferson lay out and let Breen and the crowd noise do the talking?
Not enough. Not enough. And it's my observation that I'll answer that question this way. Tim McCarver got a lot of heat, especially towards the end of his career. But there were times, and people may not remember this, but I remember it very well, John. There were times when McCarver would go almost an entire half inning during a playoff game and not talk. And director Bill Webb, who was absolutely incredible, and Joe Buck would set the scene with pictures and words, and McCarver would go a few outs or sometimes an entire half inning without talking. Now, I'm not saying that you do that in the NBA, and I'm not saying you do that with Burke and Jefferson here, but that's the challenge of having a three-person booth. It's like there's this temptation to fill time and fill space with something. One of the things NBC was really just respected for during their NBA days was after a big bucket and a timeout would be called, all of the announcers would just lay out and they would bring up the score graphic, and you would see the player walking towards the bench who just made the big shot, and they would fade into the commercial break. That's not something, in my opinion, that happens enough with ESPN's NBA Finals coverage.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And to be fair, I don't remember that really ever happening on TNT. You know, it's something that just people don't really do anymore. I don't know what happened. Like on the big Shai Gilgeous-Alexander play, now you probably wouldn't lay out in this scenario because it was a road play, so the crowd is kind of quiet. But on the big Shai Gilgeous-Alexander play in game 4, I did see that ESPN went to break with some 70s music, didn't they? I don't know if it was 70s music, but it was music that was not nearly appropriate for the moment. I just don't get it, you know? Tim Corrigan is an interesting character to me because he obviously has been doing this a long time. So he was doing this when the quality of the broadcast was way better. There was a long period of time where the one calling card ESPN and ABC had, the one advantage they had over TNT. TNT had the studio, TNT had the depth, but ABC had the number one team. And everybody knew that TNT at its best wasn't as good as that number one team that ESPN and ABC had. Tim Corrigan is still there. What happened? And he's going to be the main guy coming up. And I have some not high expectations, but hope, because I do think Tim Corrigan has been part of this broadcast when it was really good. But, you know, what happened? Where did the instincts go that they had? Because they did know how to do the drama a little bit better then.
It makes you wonder if with the departures, the firings, essentially, of Van Gundy and Jackson, it makes you wonder if maybe not the passion, but some of the execution just sort of went out the door with Van Gundy and Jackson. The broadcast is obviously not as good. We've talked about this quite a few times, but the other thing that all of this makes me think about is the importance of having a legitimate signature song. And ESPN had that. You know, they had these different variations of their main theme. I forget the name of the song.
Because there's
a fast break. That's it. Yeah. It just came back to me. But they had these different variations of it, and they had this one really pulsating one that they would only play during the playoffs and during big shots. Mark Jackson would do those great narrations over a replay leading into a commercial break, and you'd hear that ba-da-da-da, and you just felt a little bit more of the intensity that is desperately missing here. With some of the big shots that Gilgeous-Alexander and Halliburton and these guys have been making, just adding that little piece, that signature there with some drama and that heavy drum beat and the pulsating music, the heart pumping music that Fast Break used to provide you, even though it was never on the level of TNT or NBC. Something like that does add to the quality and adds to the drama of the broadcast as well. So just a lot of questions to be asked about ESPN's NBA coverage overall.
Yeah, they talk about aura. You know, we're taping right now. It's It's 8:32 Eastern, so we're missing the opening of the game. I know ABC is ABC was set to carry the pregame introductions today. So I'm going to be intrigued to see how that played out after the fact. You know, the pregame introductions, all these things, they are themselves not aura. I know people like to say, oh, this is aura. This isn't going to be the sole thing, right? Because you can put, you know, I'll put it this way. It's all part of a package. And if you're doing something grudgingly or in a cursory fashion, it's not going to matter. It's all part of the package. So there has to be a buildup to it. There has to be, it has to flow. It can't just be Stephen A. and Perk are arguing and then let's go to the pregame introductions. It's part of an overall package.
That's the point. And it's a point you've made when we had our conversations about the nostalgia NBC is reaching, is tapping into as it prepares to bring its coverage of the NBA back for the first time since 2002. Coming up this fall, the spirit of it is what matters. You don't have to have these exact one-to-one comparisons, but the spirit of it is what needs to matter. I was even watching an intro Bob Costas did of Pacers Bulls 1998, that incredible Eastern Conference Finals series during the Last Dance year. And one of the things I noticed is during those opening teases, there were times when the entire tease would be about one team. And so one game, it might be only about Chicago or only about Jordan or only about this being the last run, the last dance. But what they would do is they would take the previous game's results and then use that to highlight specific players or a specific theme in the opening tease. So you take the fact that Larry Bird is coaching Indiana, which he was at the time, and then you bring up the fact that here he is this Indiana legend, and the tease had something to do with the fact that Bird was one Indiana legend, and now Reggie Miller is the current Indiana legend. It was just an effective way to tell the story and to come at it from a different angle and get people ready for the game. And those are the kinds of things that perhaps we'll see going forward here. I just took a look down and I did see the opening intros as we're taping to the finals. And it looks good. It looks good. It's a nice feel. It does bring back some good feelings. But there are ways to tell stories, John. And those stories involve more than watching Stephen A. Smith walk into the arena with a purple suit. Those things involve more than Kendrick Perkins talking about it's a legacy game and it's game two or game three. We have to do a better job in sports media as a whole of telling stories about the players and about the competitors who are before us.
When they were trying to figure out who was going to replace Maria Taylor and Rachel Nichols, something that I suggested on Twitter that got no traction, and maybe it's a terrible idea, I would have put in Robin Roberts. You know, it's the NBA Finals on ABC, after all, right? It's 2 weeks in June. She is perfectly capable of parachuting in, doing a couple of weeks. And what it would be she would come in, set the stage, and then you would have features, right? You would have profiles of the players. You would obviously go to the main announcers and analysts, I guess Breen and Van Gundy and Jackson at that point, to kind of preview the game and break it down. But you would come back to her for whatever. Maybe you could have a secondary studio team for a little extra analysis. But I've never bought the idea that you need studio analysts for the finals, because NBC didn't have them. I mean, yeah, they had Tolbert at the end. There was a year when they had Ahmad as the host and PJ Carlissimo, Kevin Johnson, and I guess Walton, and that didn't really work. They had obviously, you know, Walton and Isaiah and all these people. I just feel like there's a lot that you can do better with the studio than certainly Bob Myers, Perkins, and Stephen A. I want to know more about the players. And if I'm going to hear anyone break it down, I want to hear Doris and Richard break it down. That might be a really good showcase for them, by the way, to give them a little pregame availability where they can have a better opportunity to kind of show their stuff and break things down in depth. That's what I'm looking for. But, you know, I know what ESPN is looking for. I will say this, though. because I turned on my little YouTube TV on my laptop here, and you said it was going on with the opening intro. I didn't hear it or anything. It looked good. It looked like a real finals broadcast.
Yeah.
How insane that it took the internet to make them do something so basic.
12 years, John.
I couldn't believe that, by the way. Because 12 that means,
years.
That means they didn't do it once during any of Cavs Warriors.
Wow.
It means that there's never been a Steph Curry finals game where they played the pregame introductions. And it occurs to me, I have no idea what the Warriors announcer sounds like saying number 30 Steph Curry. I've never heard it. That's ridiculous.
12 years. I couldn't believe that either. So much of what we remember about the 90s is those intros, Chicago Bulls. Everybody knows it by now. I mean, iconic stuff. And NBC leaned into it so beautifully. I could not believe it has been 12 years since we had player introductions in the NBA Finals. Unfathomable. What was it? Brian Curtis had an interview that made the rounds on social media a bit, and I forget who he was speaking to. John, if you catch it, jump in and help me out, because I do want to give credit if I can remember. But just talking about the need for storytelling. Obviously, ESPN was never going to have an Inside the NBA type pregame show. So if you're not going to be able to provide that, what I would have done, you know, you talked about Robin Roberts, which would have been perfectly fine. I know he works a lot. Van Pelt does the postgame stuff. Why not just let him host the pregame show solo?
I was going to say this, June. Van Pelt gets, you know, one, he is the only person in this entire industry who, if Ernie Johnson decided he didn't want to do it, he could step right into Atlanta and fill that position and it would be seamless, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I think the alternate reality where instead of putting Van Pelt on Monday Night Countdown, they put him on NBA Countdown, boy, that would have solved a lot of problems.
Yeah.
I mean, look, Van Pelt with Perkins and Stephen A, that's still a rough watch. Okay. But I mean, Van Pelt is so good, man. Mm. I mean, he's the best that they've got, obviously. And look, ESPN, the way that they work, if it ever came down to Van Pelt over Stephen A, they'd choose Stephen A without any hesitation, even though Van Pelt has been everything that they could possibly ask of him. And you know what? If it comes down to it and they lay him off at some point, I'm not going to be surprised. And I don't think he will be either, because that's the way they do things over there. If he had had that position, it would be a totally different ballgame.
Yeah. Give Laura Rutledge Monday Night Countdown. Mm-hmm. And give Scott, I would not mind, John, I kid you not, the way Scott Van Pelt, of course, with great production, the way they carried those sports centers during the pandemic, I mean, creating content out of nothing showed me everything I could ever need to know about Scott Van Pelt. I would watch him host Countdown by himself,
the way Kostas used
to do. Yeah, I do too. I think he's that good that he would provide a more entertaining, informative show with better chemistry with whatever guests they would bring in for him to occasionally interview. It would be a better show with just Scott Van Pelt compared to what they've been pushing out for essentially the last 22 years.
You know, you're exactly right. And I will say this, they're going to have to figure out what they're going to do with NBA Countdown next year, because it's going to be the secondary show. Malika Andrews, she's not going to stick around to be second fiddle. She's being demoted. Her contract is up. If she's smart, she's already talking to NBC. So, Malika's okay. I mean, she's good, but it's not like it's a death blow for ESPN if she leaves. But they're going to have to figure out what to do with Countdown. If Malika were to leave, what do they do? Van Pelt, Legler, Washington, D.C. That's all you need. Just the two of them. And that to me is all you need. Now that's a lot for Van Pelt to do but it's only one day a week now, right? Wednesdays. So it's actually not that much.
Random thought I just had. Jamal Crawford would have been a good person to work with Scott Van Pelt too, or
Yeah.
Like a couple of those guys that ended up going over to NBC. But yeah, there are so many things that I hope ESPN does better here that we can only hope. It can't get much worse, yeah. In fairness. It cannot get much worse. It can't.
No. And look, tonight, to me, airing the pregame introductions was a good move. Mm-hmm. It looked good. I didn't hear it because we're taping the podcast, but it looked good. It looked right. It looked like the finals.
Have there been conversations to do it in game six? And
I have no idea. Okay. I mean, you would think they'd do it in game six. It'd be crazy not to after doing it in game five.
Yeah.
You know, to me, I just find that if they can, whether it's pressure or not, just bring back some of the things that treat the NBA finals like you treat any other major event. You don't treat the college football playoff this way, right? I mean, you just don't. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, nobody needs one of the major storylines of the NBA finals to be how bad the coverage is. ESPN doesn't need it. The NBA doesn't need it. And certainly the fans don't need that.
No, they don't.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
All right. Well, we have talked 45 minutes. This was supposed to be about a 15-minute little stretch, but we'll just replace all the stuff we talked about on the NBA side last week with this. And now what we're going to do is, so when we taped last Monday, we opened the podcast with a discussion of the TNT Sports situation, obviously the spinoff there. So we're going to put that part of the pod in now. Well, the future of Turner Sports or TNT Sports now is more in question than ever with the news breaking Monday that Warner Brothers Discovery plans to split the company in two and spin off the cable networks, TNT, TBS, CNN, everything but HBO, HBO Max, and the studio. This was long in the works, but nonetheless a significant moment for the company, because in previous spinoffs, previous acquisitions, those networks all stayed together. This time, you are now saying TNT, TBS, CNN, they are fully separate from HBO. They are fully separate from Max. And they are fully separate from the Warner Brothers TV and movie content library. So there's a lot to be concerned about if you are thinking about the future of TNT Sports and TNT and TBS generally, as Armand, I bring you in on that note.
So I come in with a question or two, and I lean on you heavily here. What relationship does this have with what was going to be Venue?
Well, that's a really good question, because I think now that the chances of those TNT networks ending up on the ESPN direct-to-subscriber platform are much higher. I don't know if anyone else agrees with that, but to me, I say, well, okay, yes, contractually they're going to be on Max, but in any potential contract renewal, there's going to be an opening there, one. And two, I don't really know how it's going to work out. Where are the TNT Sports properties in terms of streaming exclusive to Max, or can they be on another direct-to-subscriber platform like an ESPN? I mean, obviously they can be, because Venue was going to coexist with Max. So to me, that looks like something that I would, if I were in charge of this new spinoff company, certainly be looking at, because the relationship between ESPN and TNT Sports continues to get more and more intricate, obviously inside the NBA, but also the CFP deal. There's just a lot of smoke there between those two companies, and it would be a great opportunity for ESPN to basically create Venue without creating Venue. I don't believe it would require anything in terms of the government, would it? I mean, I don't know. I mean, it seems like it would be less of an issue than with Venue, because you already have the platform created, but maybe it would raise regulatory ire, and there's so many strange, you know, hoops you have to jump through now. So maybe it's not doable, but that would be something that I would look at.
The other thing I was thinking about is, what does this mean for the rights going forward from TNT's viewpoint? You've got baseball and hockey are the two I'm thinking about. What does all of this mean for TNT, TBS renewing or no longer having hockey or baseball in particular? But really, I mean, it's hard for me not to look at this and just question everything. So essentially, I'm looking to you for a little perspective on what this means going forward for TNT and TBS, et cetera.
Well, it doesn't change anything immediately, right? I mean, obviously, all of these deals are done. But you are taking out the pillars, right? HBO is a pillar. Max is definitely a pillar. You no longer have the backing of a broader company. It's basically what Time Warner was before the AT&T merger, but now without even HBO. And remember, Time Warner right before the AT&T merger, you know, a lot of people were circling around, a lot of sharks were circling around looking at that company as a potential, acquisition opportunity, including 21st Century Fox. Now, the business has changed since then. Nobody would be looking at this debt-ridden series of cable networks as an acquisition opportunity. But certainly, that actually makes it worse, doesn't it? Because now you have fewer resources than you did, and you don't even have the possibility of someone coming in and just buying you up. So what exactly happens here? Do you just become, Nexstar, Scripps? And do you even have the ability to become Nexstar and Scripps without losing everything?
I can't help. I cannot help but think about Charles Barkley here, because I hope and pray that Barkley does not go on It always seems to be the Dan Patrick Show.
Yeah.
But I hope Barkley does not start making his rounds on radio shows and podcasts talking about these things. The changes that have been made, and I still want to say Turner Sports, but the changes Turner Sports then, what was it, AT&T and something at one point?
Well, it was, I don't think it was ever, it was still Turner Sports, or it was Warner Media.
There you go. Right. That's what I'm thinking of. Right. The changes they've gone through in the last few years has been remarkable.
Yeah.
And I can't help but put myself in the position of people who would be working for TNT Sports in some form because, you know, I worked at ESPN and these are not actually one-to-one comparisons, but I'm just putting myself in that mindset. I was working at ESPN when they had the massive layoffs in 2017. And there was this air of uncertainty around the organization leading up to that time. I did not know at the time it was going to affect me, but there was this air of uncertainty. And I'm just wondering, what are employees of TNT Sports, what are employees, producers, directors, production assistants? I just would love to know what they're thinking with something like this. Obviously, what you said is true and applicable. And that this isn't something that it's earth-shattering necessarily to them right now. But my goodness, it has to make you feel a little bit uneasy if you're looking at what's happening here with this spinoff. If for no other reason, it just creates this uncertainty. And I just can't help but wonder what that means for people who are covering sports and working in sports going forward. I want to read this quote, and you wrote about it in your story for Sports Media Watch. This is David Zaslav, the head of the Warner Brothers Discovery CEO. He says, "The global networks business is a real business. Having the free-to-air as well as all of the cable and a leader in sports around the world, I think will be very strong." Talking about the optimism that he has for what's being temporarily called global networks. I'm assuming there'll be some more formalized name and process down the line. Why should I buy into or believe anything that David Zaslav is saying with that quote or anything else?
Why should you ever buy anything David Zaslav is saying, right? You know, I mean, look, he did say from the beginning, we don't have to have the NBA. And that played out exactly as you would have thought. So I would say you can believe him. You don't necessarily have to believe he's correct. You can believe that the things he says are indicative of a particular view from within WBD that may end up going exactly the opposite of their intentions. So he expresses this optimism, but, you know, the fact that you have to say the global networks business is a real business. Well, that's not a good sign. You know, you read between the lines, right? Having the free-to-air as well as all the cable and a leader in sports around the world, you know, this is kind of boilerplate PR stuff. And I don't really know that he believes it or cares, because why does he have to care? He just jettisoned these networks and their debt. He doesn't have to care about any of that. But, you know, you have to say the right things. So I don't know what the future is of these networks. I mean, I don't know that there is intended to be a future of these networks, but one thing for sure, whenever we talk about cable and we say, well, this is it, this is the end, it does kind of just stick around. Now, the question is cable the equivalent of the RSN? Is national cable the equivalent of RSNs?
Well, I'll answer that with another question, which will then inform my possible answer. How do I address that question that you just asked in light of Amazon, Netflix, Apple, Google/YouTube? How do I respond to your question in light of these massive streamers and these opportunistic outside of cable opportunities that are now being presented to leagues and to the wider world through these streamers?
Well, I would say you look at what they're spending. What are they spending?
Oof.
Right? You know, Amazon is spending the most of anybody, but they're spending the least of any of the NBA's new partners. I believe they're spending the least out of any of the NFL's regular partners. If you were to add up all the money between Amazon, Netflix, and YouTube, would it equal the other NFL rights holders' rights fees? Because I think they're all, you know, NBC, CBS, Fox, they're all paying $2 billion now, right? So would, if you add up Amazon and Netflix and YouTube combined, do they match any one of the traditional rights holders? And I don't think they do.
So then I would think, now, once again, who knows in the grand scheme of things with everything that's going on in the media world, I would think that there still would end up being some place for a cable TV presence within sports media in the next 10 or 15 years. We've had similar conversations about cable for a little while. And as you said, you look up and we're still around. You look up, it's 2010, it's 2020, and we're still here. Now, granted, you look at the landscape and, for example, the Stanley Cup final ratings being on cable, it's not been good. And there's this all this constant drop in viewership when the Final Four is on TBS compared to CBS. So, and then me as a traditionalist, I always love the idea of having your biggest events on your CBS, your over the air networks channels. But for as many times as people have addressed these doubts and concerns about cable TV, you look up and it's still there. And it's almost like for me, until I see it no more, I have to keep believing that somehow or another it'll keep popping up and random events, random sporting events, and in some cases not so random, will end up being on a TBS or a TNT, and folks will be watching.
Well, I mean, yeah, because look, one thing people don't really think about is that WBD outbid Amazon for the NBA. Technically, because WBD was willing to pay $2.2 billion for that B package, right? Now, Amazon came in, I think, at like $1.9 billion, and that's what WBD eventually sought to match. But WBD, for all the talk about we don't have to have the NBA or whatever, they were willing to pay $2.1, $2.2 billion to retain its package, which is more than Amazon is paying. It's just that NBC outbid WBD for that particular package. So if WBD, with all of that talk about Zaslav not valuing the NBA or whatever, still came in ahead of Amazon, that tells me there's still a meaningful gap between what even an uncertain cable network is willing to bid and what a streamer is willing to bid. And until that gap is bridged, I mean, the other thing too, Amazon now has, let's see, NBA, NASCAR, NFL. What am I missing? Anything else? NHL in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And
those are the top ones I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah. Apple has MLB and MLS. YouTube has one NFL game and Sunday Ticket. Sunday Ticket's a little bit different. This is a lot, obviously. It's a great wealth of rights, but it doesn't, to me, yet indicate that, you know, the streamers are both feet fully in, ready to become sports dominated. They're still kind of picking their spots, you know, just with a couple of massive exceptions. Now, that could change, but I think until it changes, you're always going to have room for a cable platform, certainly. I mean, I think cable still has more potential in terms of driving media rights revenue than streaming does.
I think that's fair. I would like to know from you and from others who cover this so deeply, at what point do you think the tide could start to turn? Is there a date? Is there a package that would come up that a streamer would get that it doesn't currently have? Is there something that would signal that change is really starting to become much more significant, and that streamers are no longer just sort of nibbling, but they're actually starting to dive in feet first?
That's a good question. One, when you start to see them really picking up, college rights. To me, obviously, there's a lot of college sports on streaming. So let's distinguish between the FANG stocks, the Facebook, Apple, Netflix, and Google, right? Kind of the catch-all term for the big tech streamers. Let's distinguish those from ESPN Plus and Flow Sports and all that. But when you start to see on Amazon, oh, the Big 12 is there. You know, the SEC down the line is there. That will be when you start to, because that's probably what a solid third of all sports content in this country is just college sports. I mean, am I underestimating it even? You know, to me, once you start to see the streamers get in there, and beyond that, it's also ordinary sports, right? So just ordinary day-to-day, every single day for 9 months, you know, Western Kentucky is playing Lindenwood somewhere in some sport, right? And when you get to that level of day-to-day grind, day-to-day ordinariness, not big events, not prime time package, but ordinary, regular, the just drumbeat of live sports, that's when.
Is that a similar thought to what ESPN did in its early days and how they gathered so many college sports events, so many rights to college sports events, that it eventually led to, is there a similarity there to how ESPN sort of worked its way into rights before getting the NFL back in 87?
Yeah, but I mean, obviously the streamers in many cases already have the big rights, right? They already got their feet in the door. It took ESPN until 87 to get the NFL. And interestingly enough, they got the NFL first before they got baseball, before obviously much later they got the NBA. I think they might've gotten hockey before they got the NFL. But actually, I'm sorry, they did get the NBA before the NFL. Everyone forgets they had the NBA for 2 years.
They sure did.
In the 80s with Greg Gumbel and but yeah, it took a few years before ESPN got the big live sports. So they're doing it a little bit differently than Amazon, which, I mean, I guess if you really go back and look at the history, Amazon got the NFL for the first time, what, 5 years ago for that one-off week 16 game when the NFL was kind of still testing things out. So, but when all is said and done, I think that it's going to be college sports that kind of heralds that the big tech streamers are fully in for live sports.
And whenever that happens, I'll be looking to you, and we may still be doing this podcast, and you'll be able to tell me, "I told you so, Armand."
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see. The main thing that I'm curious about is whether it's too early to start signing the death warrant of cable. Cable's clearly dying, but live sports, you know, it's going to, not to get morbid, but you know how they say that, like, it's a guillotine reference. So I don't know, it might be a little bit too dark, but they say that after you've been through the guillotine, you still can blink. You've ever heard about that?
I've heard it's somewhere in the back of my mind. Yeah. It's not a memory I seek to pull out on a regular basis, but it's back there.
Right. So it's a bit morbid, but kind of when the guillotine finally strikes cable, the blinks are still going to be live sports. It's still going to be able to put out live sports for a little bit before it all goes dark. And I do think that, I don't know if the guillotine is struck yet. I don't know. But I feel like live sports will be the very last thing to go. And so it's tough because, I mean, I look at this situation with TNT and I'm like, there's no way TNT can keep going. But they've got all these contracts. They've got contracts that go into the 2030s. You know, it's that those contracts aren't going to die out, and TNT isn't going to die out until those contracts are done either. So as long as they have live sports, they can be functionally done for. But as long as they have live sports, they're going to be in some capacity of existence. All right, well, that will do it for this edition of the podcast. So the plan is for Armand and I to come back later in the week and tape our normal pod, But of course, I'm going back to the NBA Finals in Indianapolis on Thursday, so that might not work out. But stay tuned. There might be a second podcast in our normal weekend release date this week. All right. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll be back with more stuff.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.